Joining us on the line, founder, director at Synthesis Software Technologies, Jake Shepherd. Jake, a very good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Howard. I don't think it's just, in other words, I think I'm part of this blackout problem that we're dealing with, the power outage stuff. Hopefully it doesn't affect the conversation.
Well, So far the line is clear. So you don't have power either. Well, no, we try and rephrase that. We don't like to say you don't have power. We like to say you don't have electricity because we've always got the power.
Yes.
Right.
100% agree with that. But so
since when has your electricity been down?
Just since 8, I think.
Oh, so it's been this morning. No, because some people have been saying that they've had no electricity since yesterday. In 30 something hours, we had about 6 hours worth of electricity. So, but right now we've had, I mean, I shouldn't say it like two, you know, but we've had almost 12 hours of nonstop electricity. Oh. Flowing through our appliances. Quite unbelievable. I feel so spoiled. But moving on to more lofty ideas. There I was the other night, Jake. It was, I was feeling completely miserable. I just cancelled a quiz where families were ready. I was so excited for the kids were dressed in pajamas across the people that were meant to be involved. We had no power for, I don't know, at that point, 10 hours or 8 hours, whatever it was. And I had to cancel. I was feeling completely sorry for myself. I poured myself a whiskey larger than I should have, but I blamed the fact that it was dark and I couldn't see what I was pouring. And I got into bed and polished off an entire slab of Top Deck chocolate. I don't even like Top Deck chocolate, but that's what was in the house. That's what I did. And I just felt I needed to do it. I made a short-term decision that I knew was not going to be good for me. Why did I do that? And let's talk about why we make short-term decisions that are bad for us.
I'm the queen of that.
Are you? Zanati is the queen, the self-proclaimed queen of poor
instant
decisions.
Instant gratification.
Right. So, Jake, this is what we need your help
with. Yes. So, I mean, I think it's really prevalent. I mean, even if you just think in terms of people choosing not to wear a mask during a pandemic, you know, that's a short-term decision. Obviously your Top Deck story, my story of battling donuts, you know, when I know it's going to make me overweight. Right. Or like we, some people light up a cigarette and they know, like, you know, lung disease is just around the corner. And I suppose on a financial front, we tend to treat our salaries as the targets to be reached and spending it all instead of trying to save something.
Right.
And I think all of these things point to a deep psychological insight that we need to, or a set of insights that we need to really unpack to better understand how we can influence our behavior going forward. And I think it all stems down to how we relate to the future. And I want to say three things. I think we don't really care about the future, and we don't really see or appreciate the future. And even if we start to do that, we start to see it and appreciate it, we seem to discount it in our decisions in favor of the present. And trying to unpack how we relate to the future is the way that we can go about trying to change the way we act and the decisions that we make. And the first part that I actually read about in Jordan Peterson's book, 12 Rules for Life, his rule number 2 is treat yourself like you're someone you're responsible for helping. And explores this whole concept of the fact that we don't actually care about ourselves. And he juxtaposes that, you know, we've got the biblical injunction that we should love your neighbor as yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So in Leviticus it says, you must not take vengeance or bear grudge against the children of your people, but you must love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. So it seems to imply that actually we do love ourselves. And the challenge is really then to extend that love to other people. But I actually think paradoxically we seem to care far more about other people than we care about ourselves.
I agree. You know, just to illustrate that point, I had a conversation with somebody yesterday in a work situation, and she had made a mistake. And phoned me really upset and going on and on and on about this mistake that she had made. And I said, if somebody else had come to you and told you what they'd made the same mistake, what would you say? And she said, no, I said, don't worry. It's not the end of the world. And I said, so why can't you be that kind to yourself? Why can't you treat exactly. yourself like you would treat somebody else in this, as you, I know that you would treat somebody else in the same situation.
We set higher standards. Seems that we set higher standards for ourselves than other people.
Which is unkind to ourselves sometimes.
Yeah. And I think the reason is actually is that, you know, when somebody does something to us that upsets us, you know, we dislike them. But imagine we ourselves know how cruel and indifferent we can be. And we know, you know, that, effectively that we're like fragile, we're damageable, we're imperfect. We know how foolish we are at times. So when you realize that, it's really hard to actually say, well, if you know yourself so intimately well, how can it be that you give yourself a break? Mm. And I think really, you know, if you go back to the biblical verse that I quoted from, I think if you realize that it's actually not just about loving a neighbor, but it's loving yourself. So it says you must not take vengeance or bear a grudge. And I think you need to actually realize that that's actually about yourself as well. You've got to be a lot more forgiving of yourself. And I think the one way of trying to understand that is to realize that when you don't look after yourself, you actually make the world a much worse place. And I think I remember listening a couple of weeks ago, you had a great interview with Elton Bondi, and you were discussing the whole concept of the stigma associated with COVID-19. And he said, well, you shouldn't have a stigma for having contracted the virus, but you really should feel ashamed for having exposed others unnecessarily. And I suppose also if you're looking at your family, you know, if you go around and you don't wear a mask and then you get sick, you're going to cause tremendous suffering for your family, like, because they've got to then take care of you and support you both physically and emotionally through the sickness. So that's one aspect. But on the flip side, we also tend to undervalue our potential. And we don't really recognize that the value that we can bring to the world. And that we actually have a light within us, that when we bring it into the world, it can make the world a better place. And then withholding that light actually makes the world a dimmer place.
Unsigned says, I think that us women do this more than men. Maybe it's a mother's instinct. In other words, taking on, being much harsher on themselves than they are on other people. Yeah,
But I think we shouldn't ignore our future potential, what we do by doing that is we undervalue the brilliance of who we will be and what we will achieve in the world ahead of us. So we also can't afford really to ignore our aspirational self. And then let's say we get this right and we actually forgive ourselves and we actually look after ourselves and we see who we can be in the future. And we see how important the future is, we still seem to discount it. And I want to suggest three reasons we go about discounting the future. And the one is that we're actually terrible at statistics. And the second is we're really great at rationalizing bad behavior. And then the third is that there's this asymmetry between now and later, and we always skew towards the now. And if you look at statistics, I would say that I make a statement that human beings are very bad at adjusting their behavior to rare events, to events that seldom happen. And if you think about the lotto, you know, my favorite lotto joke is that the lotto is a tax on the mathematically impaired because we seem to overweigh the probability that we'll win because we've got this vivid picture in our mind of us winning the lotto. And I suppose the reason is we really, really want to win the lotto. So it's a dominant picture. But we ignore the far more likely picture of us staring dejected at our ticket when our numbers don't appear. And that's one aspect. But then how does this concept of not being able to understand rare events properly work in terms of, let's say, masks within the COVID context? And I want to say, at the start of lockdown, I put on my mask, you know.
Right.
I had the image in my head of contracting the virus, landing up in hospital, fighting for my life. However, the everyday reality of what I saw, of me repeatedly being fine and actually, it then became harder and harder for me to hold on to this hospital picture. And the truth is I really didn't want this hospital picture. So it's not a picture that I wanted to bring to the fore. And then the problem is then you slip into the opposite mode of ignoring the risk altogether. So this means that when the chance of contracting the virus is actually quite small in terms of a day-to-day thing. And initially when I'd overweighed the probability of getting, getting infected, I landed up later dismissing the risk altogether. So I want to just say that human beings are really bad because in terms of dealing with rare events, because they either exaggerate them or we ignore them. We don't seem to be able to think about them accurately.
So how do we do that? How do we find a way to...
I think just recognize that we're not built psychologically, mentally, to be able to think about them accurately and just always question your behavior because of the fact that you, the way you feel about it, your heuristics, your internal way of actually making decisions, isn't a mathematical model, and therefore it's going to get it wrong often. Mm. So I suppose just be open to the fact.
Well, it's true, and being aware of it. So interesting, interestingly enough, last night we were in the same position because we didn't have electricity again, and I didn't reach for the whiskey, and I didn't reach for the Tobler, Top Deck yesterday. Okay, maybe if I had Tobler under the house, I would have, but Top Deck, the point is I didn't, and maybe just having had the awareness of my response the night before to a very similar type of a situation gave me the ability not to behave in the same way because I recognize.
It does. Becoming more conscious of the decisions that you're making is definitely important. And then the next thing I'd say, we're really good at rationalizing bad behavior. And I'm sure you'd agree that virtually all smokers know that smoking is bad for your health, and yet they continue to light up. And often one of the reasons given is that, listen, I know a relative who's a chain smoker, and look how they live to a ripe old age.
Absolutely.
And they're convinced that also going to win that health lotto, and they're also going to live to the ripe old age despite smoking. But I think another type of deception that really works really well is that this specific cigarette is not the problem, or in my case, this donut is actually not the problem. It's not the one that's going to make me fat. So it's because its contribution is really tiny, you can really ignore it. And all I need to do then is just like summon up the courage down the line, and get my willpower up for all the future temptations that I'm going to face. And then I'm going to be fine. And it sounds silly.
You know, we do this all the time.
We've all been there.
I'll give you an example of it. I'll give you an example historically in South Africa when carjackings were the thing and all the rage. We would hear about an incident and we'd say, "What? They were driving a new BMW? Are they mad? Why did we do that? We did that to because it can't happen to us because drive a Lexus. Yeah. I don't know whatever it is, and then." We do the same thing now. We hear about people that are ill with COVID in hospital, and the first thing we ask is, do they have comorbidities?
Yes.
Because by answering that, and if we don't have that particular comorbidity, then, oh, okay, so it won't happen to us. We're okay. I don't need to wear my mask. And I think that that's what we do. It comes from a few places. It's we make ourselves feel a little bit more secure that it can't happen to us because it's very scary. But also, we then can potentially justify poor decisions and poor behavior.
Yeah, and then the next area that we need to understand is that, like, we're dealing with asymmetric choices. And because what you're trying to deal with is you're trying to deal with a choice between now and later. So imagine if I offered you a deal and I said, listen, you can get 1,000 rand now, right now, or if you're prepared to wait 10 years, I'll give you 5,000 rand then. So I know that if I was given this option, my approach would be show me the money. And the reason is because I don't know what's going to happen in 10 years' time. I mean, the other person might not be there. I might not be there. I'll forget to collect the money. The rand will devalue, you know. So the future seems to be nebulous and fuzzy. And who knows if we'll even benefit from today's sacrifice. I think that's one thing. And this phenomenon is actually called temporal discounting. And it explains why we make decisions that focus on the short term. But I came across a fascinating TED talk. A shout out to my daughter, Yakira, who pointed this TED talk out to me. And it was a 2012 TED talk by a guy by the name of Keith Chen, where he explores the link between language and how much people save. And it turns out that some languages like English make a distinction in terms of the way we talk about the past, the present, and the future. So we'll say it rained yesterday, it is raining today, it will rain tomorrow. But other languages like Chinese are futureless, and they don't make this distinction. So they'll say it rained yesterday, it rained today, it rained tomorrow. And this verbal distinction that English introduces, and other languages that are temporal languages, they create a split and a distance between how we relate to the present versus how we relate to the future. And in contrast, people who speak futureless languages, they have better savings rates, they make better health decisions. So I want people just to recognize the fact that we need to go about almost explicitly trying to equate the present and the future and almost fight against the language that we use that divorces the two. And we've got to bring them actually onto the same playing field.
Absolutely.
That's so interesting.
How interesting. I'm going to watch that TED talk.
Wow. What is it again? Please repeat it.
Just repeat it for our listeners.
Yes, it's a TED talk by Keith Chen. And it's about the link between language, and whether people save or not.
So Zanati, what you're going to have to do is watch that and come back to us and tell us, how Khoza is impacted
on
it.
Okay, nice. I'll report back on Monday.
Report back, please. Absolutely fascinating.
I suppose one way of trying to do this is try and think in Chinese, but I don't know if that's going to really work.
I don't think people will adopt that right now.
Yeah, and then I can come back to my donut, you know?
Yes.
When the donut's in front of me, I can picture my teeth biting into the tasty, doughy pastry. And the resultant immense satisfaction I get when I eat it. Now let's contrast this with the vague thought that one day I'll be a bit thinner. I mean, that's not symmetric warfare. That's totally asymmetric warfare.
Mm.
And like, what chance does my desire for a healthy future really have in that situation? And it doesn't really stand much of a chance. So I suppose you and your top deck, maybe you said you didn't enjoy the top deck, but I'm sure at the time it was pretty enticing.
Oh, I need it.
I have a Kit Kat in my bag.
You just taken out a Kit Kat in front of me, Zanati, and I'm intermittent fasting. Jeez.
So I think that in terms of this, there's only one way to fight this sort of war, and that is we really need to tap into our imagination. So I suggest that we really start picturing how bad our health could really get. And lay it on thick. Just like picture yourself uncomfortable in your body. Like just think of your health declining. Mm, think of the amount of suffering that you're going to go through, and have that picture in your mind at the same time as the donut. And then it's a lot more. Then it's an even battle. Now you stand a chance.
Amazing.
So
amazing, the power that we have.
I think this is actually the battle that I go through at 3 a.m. in the morning when I have to wake up.
No, but that is the hardest time.
Yeah.
Because when you're exhausted, your ability to fight this type of thing is lowered.
And then I think, do I really need a job?
And then I think
of the future, right? If I didn't have a job, and then I get up.
Exactly, but that's right. That's exactly right. Jake Shepherd,
to summarize, I say that we all make bad decisions. And if we realize why it is we go about making bad decisions, I think we can then start forgiving ourselves, because we realize how hard it is to make the right decisions. And just become much more aware of the challenges standing in our way. And then when we are aware of them, and when we know what they are, and what are the psychological things going on inside of us, then we stand a fighting chance of actually making a lot better decisions in the future.
Absolutely awesome. Jake Shepherd, founder and director at Synthesis, thank you for taking the time to speak to us. And what a brilliant, brilliant thought-provoking.